I'm Johnny Defiant, and this has been a local time every Sunday night, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., nothing but San Diego artists. I'm running out of time here. I got 5 minutes to go, and Telegrafica Oculta is up next with Sebastian Gomez, so stick around for that. Before that, we had Forget the Joneses with Too Much, Too Fast, Screamin' Yeehaws with Misery Grove. I'm going to leave you with some, I'm out of here. If you want to give me some local music, make a local request while I'm out here, email me. Go on your computer and email me at johnnydefiant@gmail.com. And I'll see what I can do. I'll check out a webpage, pirate969.org. All right, here is one from the Corsairs, Trucker Brown, and some soloists after that, maybe some Deadbolt if I squeeze it in there. So here's the Corsairs. Thanks for listening to 96.9 FM, Power to the People.
Welcome to Telegrafica Oculta. Well, we have some interesting stories for you people tonight. Afghani warlord Abdul Rashid Dustum, as some people may know him, or just Dusty.
Very Dusty, I imagine.
Yeah. Afghani warlord survived an attempt on his life. Apparently a suicide bomber entered his court. He does hearings all the time, like a good despot.
To hire mercenaries?
No. Just for complaints. You know, people living in his area wanting to know, how they can fix a problem with their neighbor, perhaps. Or
can you complain to this guy without losing your head at our Sarkawi? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Unless, of course, you really irritate him. Because this is Dustum. If you guys don't know, back in the Afghan War, Dustum was probably one of the more brutal Afghani commanders, and he would side with the Soviets on occasion. He is a true politician of the region.
That's right. I read that.
Yeah, he would switch sides normally, but once the Taliban came in power, he was completely behind the Northern Alliance. much headed by Massoud.
Real politic.
Yeah, yeah. This guy is pretty secular, you know.
That's nice.
That's why he sided with the Soviets.
Uh huh.
For the most part, but yeah. Anyways, attempt on his life was made. 22 people were injured. The only person who died was the suicide bomber.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, and apparently his bodyguards are extremely loyal. Two of them stepped in front of the bomber.
Wow.
Taking the brunt of the explosion. Yes.
Really? So this happened a few days ago, right, Gomez?
Yeah. Yeah, not that long ago. Let's see. This was the day before yesterday, January 20th.
Wow, that'll be Friday or Thursday, I think.
Yeah, it's been in a lot of papers. This one's from Dawn, which is a Pakistani newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, Chinese hostages released in Iraq. We got the sale of Magnitogorsk. If you guys, if any of you are big on the Cold War, or World War II for that matter, Magnitogorsk is an enormous Stalinist town, the main steel production plant of the Soviet Union. Anyways, it's been sold.
So, let me guess.
Well, we're going to keep that a secret.
Nice.
Until we get to the story. And, yeah. EU arms embargo on China over the whole Tiananmen Square massacre is going to be lifted soon.
That's what I thought.
Mogadishu police chief shot dead.
Uh-huh.
Connected to a grisly story of grave defilement.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, lots of funny business going on at an Italian cemetery in Mogadishu. And the Washington Post retracts a story of Saddam Hussein's policies when it comes to, torturing people. In this case, a woman. This woman apparently said she had been raped and saw her husband get mutilated and killed by her Iraqi torturers, and it turns out the story was falsified. Indeed, her husband is alive and well, and she had been arrested on swindling people out of money.
Are we talking about the Bush administration here?
Well, actually, this was used by, you know, the United States as a reason for invading. Wolfowitz actually talked about this. When he was giving testimony with regards to reasons to go into Iraq. And it turns out the story was falsified. We actually arrested the individuals supposedly involved.
Of course.
In her torture.
I'm pretty sure.
And we tried following up on husband, and we discovered that he was actually alive.
Oh, my God.
Alive and well. He had actually left several months earlier. Pepsi and Coca-Cola having problems in India.
Nice.
4.5 mile wide, or long, line of people surrounding one of the facilities. Over 100,000 protesters.
People's revolution is taking place in India, at least in Coca-Cola and Pepsi centers.
And the Indian Navy finds a tsunami survivor.
That's right. He was there for like almost a month.
I know. He got stranded on an island.
What a survival story.
I know. And of course, everybody in Venezuela is rallying behind Hugo Chavez, or at least a big chunk of the population.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of people decidedly against Hugo Chavez, but the ones backing him up are coming out into the streets in support of his scuffle with Colombia.
And of course, Condoleezza Rice, which I have no respect for that damn fuck, said that Venezuela and Hugo Chavez, especially, is a malevolent influence on Latin America. Well, I think you got the story wrong. I think the United States intervention throughout history in Latin America is what is wrong. But, you know, what...
You have a point there.
Yeah.
I mean, Dr. Sebastian is a very astute fellow. And, last week we were talking about the United States' influence on democracy in Latin America. And the rule seems to be the further you are from the United States, the earlier and the more experiments you will have with democracy.
Just look at Mexico, how fucked up it is.
I know. They haven't been democratic since 1913.
Yeah.
Until recently.
And then we got Fox and neoliberals, a rancher as well, from fucking the northern state of Chihuahua.
Yeah, but at least, you know, it's another party. Granted, you know, a pan is pretty bourgeois, you know. kind of has middle class interests going on.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But, you know, the Revolutionary Party isn't all that revolutionary either.
Oh, not at all. No. On the contrary. We also got our established sections, the Pirate Report, Notes from the Establishment, Iraqi for a Dream. We got a lot of stuff here, you know, that we've been collecting throughout the week. I went to the march on Thursday, and it was really hectic. A lot of people got arrested, really, for bullshit fucking shit. But it was crazy.
Yeah, I was not at the march. As a political commissar, you know, I try to stay away from these events.
Yeah, we need you alive and well. I bailed out.
Yeah, I was actually in a bunker at the time.
Yeah, separate from me.
40 feet underneath the ground.
Yeah.
Just in case you got captured.
I know. I was wearing my little mask, too. And I saw a female ninja, man. Oh, my God. She was super fucking hot. Wow.
As female ninjas generally are.
Oh, my God. You guys... I was like, whoa, hello. But yeah, this is besides the point. We also, well, here we are, guys. Good evening. And Ícaro, Commissar, what are the latest developments with Ícaro, in the saga of Ícaro?
Well, apparently, after a stint at NASA,
mm-hmm.
The Mexican Air Force.
Non-existent Air Force.
Right, got wind of the whole Ícaro thing. And demanded his extradition. They weren't able to get it, so they hired some bodyguards or some bounty hunters to capture Ícaro.
Goddamn.
Yeah, they figured human powered flight will make the Mexican Air Force feasible, at least economically.
I hope so. Goddamn.
Yeah, beans and corn tortillas is far cheaper than jet fuel.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, yeah.
And he was transferred to Las Palmas, and then, like, his whereabouts right now are unknown.
Right. That's true. Although, I've heard since Ícaro has been in Las Palmas, he's been a little corrupted. and now he's making a bid for taking over the...
Arellano Felix cartel in Tijuana.
Indeed.
Goddamn.
I mean, Ícaro would be perfect as a mule. Think of it. I mean, he has wings. He can fly.
He can be a cargo ship.
And he can at least swallow a kilo of heroin.
Or cocaine or pot, whatever you want to name it.
Right. Yeah.
My God. Ícaro's going crazy, man.
Well, customs gave him an idea. They held him for so long, and the reason why is they were waiting for him to pass the drugs, mm-hmm. you know, that they thought he ingested. But yeah. He's a good boy. He wasn't doing that. And
well, now after Las Palmas.
Yeah, but now that the system is has his hands on him, he's learned an awful lot of nasty things.
Oh, yeah. Goddamn, Ícaro. Ícaro. As you guys know, the Ícaro was released from the bottom of the ocean thanks to the tsunami 4 weeks ago. He was buried there for thousands and thousands of years. And the tsunami happened, and Ícaro was released. Oh, and we got this fucking Nazi leaving the post FCC chairman. What's his name again?
Oh, that's right.
Great
Michael
story.
Powell.
Enemy number
is
one.
Out. Ding dong.
Enemy number one on Pirate Radio.
Well, but who's going to replace him?
Probably.
That's the question.
Oh, that's a very intriguing question.
You know, what will the FCC look like after Michael Powell?
With the current trend, Gomez, I think it's going to get worse.
Because in some ways, you know, I'm kind of sorry to see him go. He's so photogenic in some ways.
You got a picture here.
Yes, we do. And his face is just so easy to just kind of paste over other things. He sort of looks a little bit like Mao Zedong.
What's the message there?
It says, Chairman Powell says, cooperation good, competition bad.
Monopolies are better.
That's true. Because Michael Powell, of course, was trying to push through deregulation to its fullest extent. And... was also responsible for, you know, millions of dollars in fines for obscenity charges.
Howard Stern.
And
he's happy to see him go.
Oh, he's extremely happy. He was really on top of that. Like, as soon as the Wall Street Journal on Friday reported that Michael Powell was on his way out, Howard Stern was, like, throwing a party.
Oh,
you know, he was absolutely
probably
with Ícaro
doing a rail of cocaine or something.
Yeah.
Goddamn crazy fucking celebrities. Oh, Gomez, remember we reported this story about 3 months ago about this columnist from Texas, the Daily Star in Texas, Mr. Navarrete Jr. Guess what?
What?
Oh, my God. He was hired by the San Diego Union-Tribune. He's coming to San Diego, and he said in his speech, like, yeah, I'm looking forward to San Diego because I have a lot of listeners there, a lot of readers, excuse me, and I'm looking forward to open up more dialogue with my opposition. He was mentioning us.
Really?
Yes. So
he was mentioning us?
Not directly, but yes, by the paragraphs, you know.
Well, that's kind of odd. I mean, there's plenty of, like, right-wing wackos in San Diego on the radio.
But you know why? Because Mr. Goldsmith, he was a columnist from the San Diego Union-Tribune for 13 years, and he was the only man that held some fucking ethics as far as journalism, and he resigned from the San Diego Union-Tribune last month over an article that he was going to publish. And the San Diego Union-Tribune said, no, this is too controversial, and he resigned. I'm going to contact this man, and if we can get him on a little interview or something, we're going to do that.
And they're replacing him with this guy from Texas.
Yeah, a very progressive, ethical journalist from many years of experience, replaced by this fucking right-winger coconut.
Oh, my God. Well, we definitely need to get in touch with him.
We're going to get on.
Yeah.
He's going to get
heated. Let's talk to us.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is gonna get just worse. And now we're gonna play Radio Contra la Máquina, Guerrilla Radio, and we got Molotov, Give Me the Power.
Excellent.
And this is Fox News. Time is kidding.
Yeah, and we'll get to the Molotovs later. Apparently, they've been popping up in Japan.
Everywhere. Well, this is 96.9 FM Telegráfica Oculta.
extorsionando
dinero.
Pero ellos viven de lo que tú estás pagando. Y si te tratan como a un delincuente,
ladrón,
no es tu culpa. Dale gracias al regente. Hay que arrancar el problema de raíz,
uh-huh,
y cambiar al gobierno de nuestro país. A la gente que está en la burocracia, a esta gente que le gustan las migajas. Yo por eso me quejo y me quejo, porque aquí es donde vivo y yo ya no soy un pendejo que no guachas los puestos del gobierno. Hay personas que se están enriqueciendo,
gente que vive en la pobreza y nadie hace nada porque nadie le interesa. La gente de arriba se detesta. Hay más gente que quiere que caigan sus cabezas. Si le das más poder al poder, más duro te van a venir a coger.
Porque fuimos potencia mundial, somos pobres, nos manejan mal.
Dame, 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 dame todo el power para que te demos en la madre. Gimme, 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 gimme todo el poder so I can come around to poder. Dame, 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 dame todo el power para que te demos en la madre. Gimme, 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 gimme todo el poder so I can come around to poder. Dame, 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 dame todo el poder. Dame, 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 dame todo el power. Dame, 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 dame todo el poder.
Welcome back to Telegrafica Culta. Well, we got a story here about drugs in Japan. Apparently, drugs, at least the confiscation of drugs in Japan, has increased by 23%. Apparently, over a ton of drugs have shown up in Japan. Specifically, 1,358 kilograms of illegal drugs and stimulants. Along with, or at least part of that, is 429,000 tablets of ecstasy, which is up 11% from last year. But really, let's think about the numbers. Mm-hmm. That isn't really a lot of drugs. I would say a ton of drugs gets captured on a weekly basis in the United States. And apparently, from someone reading this article in Australia, or at least an Australian, said, that's nothing. You can fit all those drugs in one large pickup truck. And that's true. Think about it. It's only a ton.
Wow. Yeah, come on.
You can fit that in the bed. In Australia, that amount of drugs is seized in 1 month.
1 month.
In 1 month. Apparently, drugs are incredibly scarce in Japan. People generally don't use it recreationally. They just kind of stick to alcohol and cigarettes. I'm sure if you have some Yakuza friends, you can get some drugs.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. But otherwise, it's going to be really tough. So, I don't know. Well, Japan probably has some pretty harsh drug laws. So I'm not going to recommend that anybody relieve the drug situation in Japan by shipping over as many drugs as possible. Besides, I think that might be illegal. But anyways, I think the Japanese need to lighten up. Just like the person who sent a bullet to the chairman of Xerox.
A bullet?
Yotaro Kobayashi. Isn't that a marvelous name, Kobayashi?
With a bullet in your head, yes.
Well, no. He didn't get a bullet in his head. He got it. The police found it, or he found it. He called the police. It was just left there. I guess a few Molotov cocktails have been left there before.
He must be a nice soul to get that.
Well, I mean, there's speculation as to why this would have happened. I mean, why would the president or the chairman of Xerox get these kinds of threats?
What is he
doing? Apparently, it was a rifle round. It was a 30 caliber rifle round that was left. And
big bullet.
Someone has some interesting theories. Apparently, the liberal democratic government in Japan has been making it a little bit difficult to deal with China.
Uh-huh.
Because Koizumi, on occasion, visits war memorials for Japanese soldiers who died in World War II. And he isn't a revisionist, but he definitely has not stopped the influx of revisionist history books in Japan. You know, he hasn't really talked about it much. It's not like he's condoning it, but he hasn't spoken out against it, for sure.
Wow.
And some people think that it's actually right-wing Japanese.
Right-wing Japanese.
Who are threatening the chairman of Xerox because he criticized Koizumi for these activities, particularly visiting the war shrines to the deceased Japanese soldiers, because every time he does that, the Chinese get really upset. And China, second to the United States, is Japan's largest trading partner.
That's right. And they were receiving aid from Japan not so long ago, still.
I know.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, but apparently some people got upset at these comments.
Uh-huh.
And the last time he said this, he got over 1,000 death threats.
1,000?
Yeah, and people actually camped out in front of his house.
Whoa.
To kind of protest his comments against Koizumi visiting the war shrines.
Shit.
Right. And Thailand has scrapped its death row webcast.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, that's kind of interesting. What they were going to do is they were going to set up webcams in death row so people could watch inmates during their daily activities and even their preparation for execution. But the plan was scrapped. Apparently, too many human rights groups complained about this. There were even some people in the Thai government who were, like, uneasy about the whole concept. Now, I think they have televised executions in the past.
Really?
But nowhere yet have they, like, infringed upon the privacy of these people. Well, I guess having your death televised is a little bit of an infringement of privacy.
I will say so. Goddamn.
But it was never the entire lifespan or, you know, life cycle of these death row inmates. And by the way, in Thailand, you can very easily get the death sentence for drugs.
Really?
Yeah. If you have speed, ecstasy, and you plead not guilty, I mean, generally they sentence you to death from the get-go. But if you plead not guilty, you definitely get it. If you plead guilty, on the other hand,
sucks.
It's like plea bargaining, and you might just get 50 years or life.
For speed or cocaine or something like that. But
yeah.
How much? Are we talking about big quantities, or are we talking about, like, users, one user, two users?
Users, most of the people caught are caught trafficking,
because
that's harder to hide, you know? A user, perhaps, can swallow the pills, you know?
Eat the coke.
Right, something. But generally, these are tourists who've been to Thailand before, get comfortable, and then decide, well, hell, why don't I just get rid of a whole bunch of drugs here?
Why not?
Why not? And then they find out that Thai, at least in Thai law enforcement, isn't as permissive as they thought it would be.
But is this applies to foreigners as well as citizens, or is
a lot of foreigners in Thai prison?
But yeah, they don't get to get executed, right?
Yeah, they do.
Whoa! What the? Well, yeah. Let's, for example, let's talk about the Mexican citizens here that get executed in Texas. Mr. Bush, hello.
Oh no! Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow.
However, why don't we just get into it now? Apparently the deal is that if you get a long sentence, uh-huh, let's say you don't get the death penalty, you get 50 years.
For, like, say, like you're trafficking some kilos of cocaine, let's say.
Right. Not even that much. Generally, it's pills.
Pills?
Pills.
Vicodin.
Or people trafficking things out of Thailand.
Drugs or
a lot of people go to Thailand and buy latex opium. Like opium that's still in latex form. It's not oxidized.
Uh-huh.
And it's worth a lot of money. And they will try to take it out of Thailand, because lots of it comes in through Burma.
Right.
So, you know, they're sitting in some Amsterdam bar. They're getting low on money. They're talking to this guy. And he sets them up with some dealer in Thailand.
Uh-huh.
And they fly and they pick up the liquid heroin. And then they get stopped at the airport before they get on the airplane.
Fuck.
And it's like death penalty at that point.
Damn, that's fucking hardcore, man.
Yeah, but you stay guilty, and you might only get 50 to 100 years.
But think about it. This is a personal choice, I know, I understand. Let me interrupt you here. What is worse, spending 50 years of your life in prison or getting killed? I'd rather get killed, dude.
Well, let me finish here. Thai prison isn't as bad as it seems. For one thing...
Uh-huh.
Chances are you'll spend about 8 years in Thai prison.
Out of 50.
Out of 50. And then you will be transferred to your home country to spend prison time there.
42.
And depending on what country you're from, the amount of time you spend there might be different. For instance, in England, you spend half the time that you would have spent in Thailand in British prison. If you're from the United States...
Bushland.
Well, give them a break on this one. You'll spend about 8 months.
Great.
In American prison, once you get transferred...
No, it's not American anymore. It's Bushland.
Yeah, Bushland. Sorry.
Okay, good.
Freedom Bushland.
Yeah.
Right. Freedom Land. Can I call it Freedom Land?
You're the commissar.
Okay. We come back to Freedom Land, and you get incarcerated again, but only for 8 months this time.
Not too bad.
Right. So... And think of it. Thai prisons are a lot like Mexican prisons.
Oh, my God.
You have to pay for everything. You have to pay for your food and better accommodations and whatnot. And if you're an American, there are actually a lot of nonprofit organizations that try to help out Americans who are incarcerated in other countries. So you're going to get something like, what is it? It's about $50 a month from these guys.
Cigarettes.
Yeah. Oh, cigarettes are 15 cents a pack.
That's right.
They might be more expensive in prison, but generally it's very cheap. So
they're good. We
like,
just had some once.
Yeah, and as far as you can have visits. You can have visits from your wife, for example.
Or a friend.
In Thai prison. Or a friend.
Ninja friend.
And if you can, you know, just close your eyes a little bit and think about something else. There are, I mean, the Thai prisons are just teeming with ladyboys, otherwise known as katoy.
Katoy?
Yes.
Ay, 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 katoy. At that point...
Yeah, and in Thailand, when you have a sex change operation, your gender doesn't change. You're still male. So you get sent to the male prison.
As a katoy.
As a katoy.
Well, katoy gets it in the oi.
I imagine so, but there's lots of them. They have, like, their own unions and whatnot.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Thailand.
But anyways, yeah, no more death row webcams.
Eh.
So, what do we got?
We got madness in the streets!
Over there! Hit me! Get him! Get him! Get him! Get him! Get him!
Welcome back to Telegrafía Oculta 96.9 FM. Now I got that Spain is compensating the war children. The Spanish government is to compensate citizens who were forced to flee Spain as children during the 1930s Spanish Civil War. The Spanish cabinet said that it will pay the survivors 6,090 euros, European money, which is about $83,000. It's a lot of money. Campaigners say that there are about 540 of the so-called war children alive, mostly in Eastern Europe and Latin America, mainly in Mexico and Argentina. President Lázaro Cárdenas, there's a very famous picture of Spanish dissidents from the Spanish Civil War arriving at Mexico City Airport. Lots of it. As you guys know, Mexico was a colony of Spain for over 300 years.
Yeah, quite a while. I mean, they took over from the Aztecs.
Yeah.
Which they deposed in a...
annihilated.
Well, annihilated, but deposed. It was like, because the Aztecs were small.
Yeah.
Comparatively to the other people living in Mexico at the time.
True, but they were in the center of Mexico, you know, in Mexico City nowadays, so, you know.
Yeah.
That's where the Spanish established the capital.
Yeah, but 300 Spanish soldiers. It's not going to take over the Aztecs.
And a few horses.
And a few horses. That isn't going to cut it.
But they made alliances with the tribes around.
Exactly.
That was a very smart point. Because the Spanish, as you guys, I don't know if you guys know, in the first attempt, they went to, there's a legend of Quetzalcoatl, or the white feather god from the sky. Quetzalcoatl left before the Tenochtitlan was built, and he promised to come back and avenge his loss with Huitzilopochtli, the sun god. And then the legend says that a white-bearded man, God, was going to come and destroy and reclaim his empire. And when the Spanish came to Mexico, there were news, like, there was, like, white people on strange animals with fire sticks coming, and they looked like Quetzalcoatl, like God. And then when the Spanish came, they went to Mexico, to Tenochtitlan, and then the Aztecs actually opened them up, offered them their doors to the Spanish.
Well, yeah.
All nicely and stuff, you know?
Well, there have been a few engagements up to that point.
But on the outskirts.
That the Spanish totally annihilated.
Of course.
You know? So
technology, man, is amazing.
Yeah.
Commissar, technology.
Absolutely. That and illness.
Yeah.
But anyways.
Oh, my God. Especially illness.
Yeah. No, they did accept him in with open arms, but there was a lot of problems in the Aztec kingdom at that time. Because uh-huh. The Spanish were even getting sort of half-hearted support from people inside Tenochtitlan.
Uh-huh.
Because the city was split up into many, many sectors. It used
no.
to be four or five different cities.
That's no. The Tenochtitlan was the main city, but it was huge. But the tribes around the lake,
yeah.
They were slaves of the Aztecs.
Right.
And they were pissed about it.
Yeah.
And they seemed to align with the Spaniards.
Actually, Tecloco, where a recent massacre occurred.
Tlatelolco.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Was the location of another big massacre. I believe the Spanish took over that.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Pretty early on, and it was very bloody. And then, for a long time, they were besieging Tenochtitlan for over a year.
No, but first they were invited by Cuauhtémoc, you know, the last Aztec emperor, and they offered them a get together and like, hey, you guys are God, and they got together. Hernán Cortés was there, and then the Spanish were like, okay, we're inside, and they tried to revolt inside the fucking city, and they got crushed. And Hernán Cortés barely escaped with his life intact. And there's a famous tree outside inside Mexico City. It's called El Árbol de la Noche Triste, or the Tree of the Sad Night, when Hernán Cortés wept at the tree because he saw himself as a failure, and not as a very a bright conqueror. But then he gathered strength, and he made alliances with the tribes around, and then the rest is basically history.
Right. Yeah.
But he lost the first fight.
Yeah, he sure did. It was a very long and bitter struggle.
That's a good point, because after that, they besieged the city for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They cut water to the city, to some canals. It was, and then epidemic, you know, the European white diseases, you know, took over. The horses, fire sticks.
Spain has been there for a long time.
Oh, yeah, Spain is. Mexico was called New Spain, and Mexico City was called Tenochtitlan. La Nueva España, or New Spain, and then Mexico City now.
Actually, I've heard a big chunk of Spain is owned by Mexican citizens.
the banks.
Yeah. Well, no, rich Mexicans love to have a home in Spain.
It's a cultural thing.
Yeah, it is.
You know, there's a big, a lot of Mexicans are like descendant of Spanish and Aztec or just Spanish. And so like Mexico, let's give you an example. Spain is what Britain is to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's it.
And here's a strange connection.
Oh.
The Zionist Mexican connection.
Oh my God, there are a lot of them.
Yeah, actually, I think the largest investors, at least in real estate, in Israel, are Mexicans.
Sephardic Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from Mexico City. Well, the new pension has been welcomed by the Civil War children now in their 70s and 80s and 90s. And there's about, when Franco died in 1975, out of the 3,000 or so-called children that left with their parents, just the children alone, 2,000 came back, and nowadays in Spain there's only 60 of them alive. But yeah, guys, the a big event one of the biggest events of the 20th century, pre-World War II, was the Spanish Civil War. That's when the Luftwaffe and Hitler actually like used all his fucking new weapons of mass destruction on the Spanish soil under the watchful eye of Franco. There's a very famous portrait by a mural by Pablo Picasso, Guernica, or the town of Guernica that was destroyed by the German Luftwaffe, you know, the German Air Force. They were using the most advanced technologies in Spain, of course allowed by Franco, to destroy Spanish citizens. So there's a big connection with there.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I was reading a recent article comparing Fallujah to Guernica.
Wow, interesting.
Because in both situations, Franco asked Guernica to be bombed.
Yeah.
Iraq, apparently Alawi asked United States to attack Fallujah.
Fuck yeah.
And in both instances, lots of civilians died. Granted, as in Guernica, there were probably lots of insurgents, or in this case, actually, this is the one reversal. Well, actually, maybe not. But Franco was trying to do a coup d'etat.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people assume that the side the fascists were supporting was the official government or something. I don't know why.
But uh-huh.
That seems to be the normal story.
Yes.
But really, Spain was a democratic republic.
Mm-hmm.
And
with a king.
With a king.
Mostly symbolic.
But the king sided with Franco.
Yeah.
You know,
that's why Juan Carlos II, Juan Carlos, the king now of Spain, when this happened, guys, the king of Spain, Juan Carlos, was a pupil of Franco. He was well kept, and he was Franco's chosen next leader. He sent Juan Carlos out of the country, to safety, to the best schools in the whole planet, to keep him alive. So, you know, he had that sense of monarchy still.
Right.
Wow, that's fucking nuts.
So Franco did a coup d'etat of the Republican government.
Uh-huh.
Ergo, the side fighting Franco were known as the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with Nebraska Republicans.
Oh my God, no! Christ the Lord.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
That was absolutely amazing, but. Nazis were in Spain supporting Franco and using their high tech stuff. They did one of the first bombing raids on a city.
Guernica is the name.
That's true.
Picasso, the artist. God. And speaking of a little bit of Fallujah and Guernica, Al-Sarqawi, so they say, boasts to war on Iraqi and Poland stations. Sarqawi has declared, by some accounts, we're unconfirmed right now by the foreign press, war on the next Sunday's election in Iraq. An audio tape on an Islamist website claimed to be from Al-Sarqawi calls on Sunni Muslims to fight against the election proposal, the election plot, whatever. And he says, I'm going to quote this man, "We have declared a bitter war against the principles of democracy and all of those who seek to enact it." Sarqawi, as you guys know, has claimed responsibility for many bombings and, of course, his most infamous work, beheadings. Have you seen any of the beheadings, Gomez?
No.
Oh, my God.
I generally don't look at the beheading spectacular videos.
I've seen them all.
I figure it's my one way to fight terrorism.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know, gotta be honest, I've seen a lot of shit in my day, mm-hmm. but halfway to those, that when the neck is cut with a small knife,
right,
and you hear the screaming and you see those images, you cannot help but turn your face and feel awful.
Yeah, no, awful. I've heard it's done with a small knife.
That's fucked up. They do it on purpose.
It's like stabbing someone to death with a spork.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh my God, it takes minutes and you see everything. That's not something you want to see, but in the spirit of free media.
Oh, absolutely. I think it should be accessible if you want to see it, you know.
Why not? But it's just brutal.
I make the decision not to, generally.
Yeah, but it's really like out there. It's really out there. And now
I'd rather look at porn. I always figure there's plenty of death and dying on television.
Perhaps. Yep, you're right. You're right. Or in video games.
And video games. I mean, why is death so okay to watch on the media? You can't look at porn on the media. Oh, hell no. You're doing something wrong at that
point. If you're in the United States.
Yeah, but if you're just looking at, like, real people screaming to death as they're getting their head cut off, that's fine.
You have a point. And finally, Mr. Political Commissar Gomez, it seems that the Orange Victor was sworn into president today. Fill us up.
Oh, talking about Ukraine, Yukashenko.
Of course.
Yeah, he's officially the president of the Ukraine.
The Orange Revolution.
That's true. And it might be the last one.
Perhaps.
Leaders across the former Soviet Union are taking very close note.
Belarus.
Of what's happened in Ukraine. And a lot of them are making sure that the same thing is not going to happen in their countries.
Meanwhile, he's going to visit the new Russian Tsar this week.
Yeah. Well, Putin's already said he's willing to work with Yushchenko.
Smart man, Mr. Putin. Putin.
Yes.
Yeah. And now, speaking of elections and people getting reelected and promising shit, you know, Mr. Abbas says that a ceasefire will become a reality very soon. Palestinian new leader Mohammed Abbas said he's close to reaching a deal with the militants to stop attacks on Israel. In an interview with Palestine media today, Mr. Abbas said talks with the factions had made great progress, quote unquote. Israel, however, has said that, Mr. Abbas has said that Israel has to put a stop to the incursions to Palestine and the attacks and other violent acts. However, there have been no attacks on Israel or Gaza since talks began between the Palestinian leader and the militant groups such as Hamas. But militants have denied a claim by an Israeli minister that a truce deal has already been reached. Well, now we got some a Radiohead. There.
welcome back to Telegráfica Culta. We're going to be focusing on Iraq now. Apparently, the Washington Post's July 2003 story on the abuses, torture, psychological torment of this poor woman were falsified. Apparently, the story which Secretary Paul Wolfowitz used in his testimony to legitimize the invasion of Iraq,
of course,
back in 2003 to the Senate, was false. He was using false information. I guess he just read the story out of the Washington Post, and it was completely blown out of proportion. Anyways, this is how it goes. In the 2003 story, Hanna was quoted as saying that she was in prison after he had eloped with her husband, Haitim Jamil Anwar, whom she said was of Indian origin. The marriage, she said, was not valid under Iraqi law because she had not received the proper permission to marry a foreign national.
Wow.
Right. So she wants to clear this up. And she said she'd gone to the Iraqi Olympic Committee building in Baghdad, hoping that Saddam Hussein's son, Uday, would help.
The snake.
Instead, she said she was arrested between November 1993 and early 1996. She was held in cells adjoining the police academy, where she said she and other female prisoners were beaten and raped. Soon after the Post published the story, other U.S. newspapers blew it out of proportion and turned Hanna into an Iraqi heroine who somehow managed to escape the U.S. from the clutches of the Saddam regime. Her testimony led to the arrest of several Iraqi security officials for torturing her and killing her husband. Based on her testimony, U.S. officials took her into protective custody in Baghdad and then brought her to the U.S., where she received political asylum and financial support. The reporter Peter Finn, who wrote the July 2003 story, said in his article on Thursday, just this Thursday, that recent interviews in Baghdad showed that her husband was alive and had left Iraq several months ago.
Back to India.
Yeah. They also said that while Hanna was in prison in Baghdad in 1990, it was not for the reason she told the Post. Apparently, she had been in prison because she was cheating people out of money on the promise that she would get them visas to emigrate to Western Europe.
What a pearl.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, I'm not saying that the Saddam regime didn't torture and kill tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people.
A lot of people.
I mean, it was a daily occurrence. A lot of people got harmed. However, I think this really illustrates the quality of intelligence that we've been getting from Iraqi defectors prior to the invasion of Iraq. I mean, people who are trying to defect have to have a juicy story.
Of course.
Otherwise, they're not going to get asylum.
Gets you into the States.
Exactly.
Gets you in to do the purpose of the emperor wants.
Right. And Cheney's little intelligence group, which
committee,
which just totally overshadowed the CIA when it came to its influence on the president. A lot of that intelligence was based on the testimony of Iraqi defectors.
True.
You know, which in the light of this article... And actually, all the way back then, even the CIA was like, you know, these guys aren't telling the truth on a lot of these things. They're just saying stuff to make it seem like, you know, they really should be getting political asylum.
But the emperor and company didn't want to hear anything else. They had their plans already made up.
They didn't want to hear anything else. The CIA was like, look, Saddam Hussein does not have weapons of mass destruction. The fucking nuclear scientist who just defected and said he'd been working on one last week is full of shit. You know.
Yeah. So what happened with the Chinese men in Iraq today, Gomez?
Well, quite a few of them got released.
That's what I heard.
About eight of them.
So what happened?
Well, apparently the Islamic Resistance Movement, which is the group that had captured him.
One of the many groups that are in Iraq right now.
Yeah. It was the Al-Numan Battalion of the Iraqi resistance movement.
Uh-huh.
And they released them to another group, which was sort of mediating this issue. It's called the Islamic Scholars Association. And they helped release a few other Chinese hostages in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess is that... you know, they're not gonna kill Chinese people, even though they were apparently helping in the reconstruction effort of Iraq, which is a big no-no in insurgent circles.
Oh yes, a huge no-no.
Yeah, but they want to keep relations with China good, so they let them go.
Uh-huh.
There was even video of the former hostages shaking the hands of the insurgents who were holding them, like, goodbye.
That's,
you know,
kind of a stage tactic, because when the French journalists were released. About like a month ago, they were really released in under really stressful conditions. You know, they were like, they had a bag on their heads, a mask, and they were transferred to cars like potato sacks.
No, these people were just found. Like, they just like dropped them off.
Or kiss you on the cheek, and later, give me your email, call me back, hey, let's hang out with a beer.
And I think we should follow up on that. Remember the Marine
uh-huh.
who got captured and wound up in Syria?
Yes!
What
That's
happened
fake,
with
man.
That?
I don't know. Let's find out for next week.
Let's find out for next week.
Excellent.
Because I haven't seen that in the news ever since that bizarre...
But he staged his shit.
I guess so.
That's what they say. We have to find out.
We have to find out. I mean, but people's memories are so short.
Oh, we have.
Yeah. That was such an interesting story. I haven't seen any follow-up for that.
Me neither. Well, we're going to jump into Iraq for a Dream. Today, 10 Iraqis... including a mother and her child, have been killed in attacks in northern Baghdad, with elections only 1 week away. 4 other people were killed in a firefight in Baji. Meanwhile, a polling station in a government building and a police station were dynamite around the country on Sunday. A police station in the western town of Hit was blown up, according to Iraqi officials. U.S. Marines were surrounding the building in the town, demanding this silence to be handed over. A lot of stuff going on over there. In Mosul, U.S. forces said that they detained 42 people as their battles to subdue the out-of-control city, where 20 U.S. soldiers have been killed since December 21st. On Saturday, a U.S. soldier died in a firefight, and on Sunday, another U.S. soldier was also killed, which brings the U.S. dead rates to the number of 1372 since the illegal invasion of Iraq in March 2003. 1372. Meanwhile, on Sunday, 6 members of the Iraqi army were injured when a car bomb exploded at an army checkpoint in front of the Polish headquarters in Hila. Also today, a U.S. helicopter has been forced to make an emergency landing in Mosul after being hit by enemy fire. In a bit of international news about Iraq, the Portuguese are about to withdraw their small force. The Portuguese government confirmed that it will withdraw its 120-strong military police unit on the 12th of next month after holding elections at the end of this month.
But don't worry. The coalition of the willing is strong. There are 19 Armenian soldiers heading for Iraq as we speak.
Oh, my God. Wow, impressive. It was impressive on the march of Genghis Khan. Meanwhile, the U.S. imposed interim government has announced sweeping security measures to protect voters in the upcoming fake elections. Martial law will be extended. In many areas, election staff will keep the location of the polling station secret until the last minutes. Iraq's borders will be closed for 3 days around the election. And Baghdad's airport is to be closed for 2 days. I don't know who in their fucking sane mind will take an Iraqi flight to Baghdad. I don't get that. And next week, I'm going to promise you, I'm going to bring you the story of Baghdad airport. Because it doesn't make any fucking sense. So whatever. Also, people will be barred from carrying weapons. What's with the Baghdad airport, man? What the fuck? Do they fly? Does Continental British Airways have flights there? I doubt it.
No, but there's plenty of flights bringing in arms.
Ah, and
yeah, for various people. Various people. The U.S. government, for one.
Mercenaries hired by these government.
Actually, yeah. Mercenaries are bringing in tons of weapons into Iraq as we speak. In fact, there's been a few investigations on the subject. It's not pretty. Yes.
Really?
Actually, well, recently, one mercenary got killed in Iraq.
Was it British? A British national, right?
No,
I think.
An American.
Oh, that's right. He got gunned down by the only Iraqi friends. So they suspect.
Apparently,
that's
this guy was gunned down on his way to the airport.
By friendly fire, they say.
Yeah.
Not so friendly fire,
I guess. It was blamed on insurgents, but apparently he was bringing up concerns that the new legitimate government of Iraq was horribly corrupt and was holding on to his money.
See what happens to when a man gets honest?
Yeah, and, honest, I don't know.
Mercenary, you know, but at least he was fucking having the balls to say something about it, and he got
Well, he just wanted his money. I mean...
Yeah, mercenaries.
I think the way it was working is the money went from the United States, and then it went to the Iraqi government, where it was given to a Libyan businessman.
Oh.
Who was going to do something with it, and, you know, the money just kept on changing hands.
He was pissed.
And eventually got to him, but it was a lot smaller by that point.
Yeah, you guys know that mercenaries, they work for hire.
That's true. Pay for play, buddy.
Fuck yeah. I know you will do that. Pay for play, exactly. Well, welcome to the jungle. And then, but why control? And then we got the pirate report.
Welcome to the
welcome back to Telegráfica Culta. And now it's time for the weekly piracy report, which is brought to you, well, apart from us, here at Free Radio San Diego. It's from the International Criminal Court of Justice, International Maritime Bureau, which collects the attacks on a weekly basis. Anyways, here is our last attack on the 11th of January, 2005, roughly 3:50 in the morning, Kingston, Jamaica. Three robbers armed with long knives boarded a tanker underway at the forecastle. They broke into the forecastle locker and stole the ship's stores. The crew mustered, and at 4:15 in the morning, the robbers jumped overboard and escaped on a boat, waiting with two accomplices. The Kingston Coast Guard was informed. And then, on the 12th of January, 2005, around 10:45 in the morning, off the coast of Oman, in the Arabian Sea, four masked pirates and four white-hulled speedboats attempted to board a container ship underway. The alert duty officer raised the alarm and the crew mustered and activated fire hoses, and the master took evasive maneuvers. The pirates aborted the attempted boarding and moved away. And then on the 13th of January, 2005, at around 3:50 in the afternoon, Palau Laut Anchorage, Indonesia. Yay, the Indonesian pirates are back in business. Four robbers armed with guns and long knives boarded a bulk carrier at the forecastle. The alert duty officer raised the alarm and the crew mustered. The robbers stole a life raft and escaped in a speedboat. The master tried to contact port authorities, but received no response. And then, on the 15th of January, 7:30 in the morning, Macapa Anchorage, in the Amazon River, Brazil, robbers boarded a general cargo ship via anchor chain and stole ship stores from the forecastle locker. The alert crew raised alarm and the robbers escaped in a speedboat. The master reported the incident to the local authorities, but there was no response. Well, I guess Brazil is not holding on to their port duties as well as they should. This is something to be expected in Indonesia or even in Lagos Harbor, Nigeria. But apparently, the port authorities in Brazil aren't that much better. Well, anyways, here we got the Spanish Armada. We got some nice instrumentals from Ratatat. Thank you. now. We're going to start off with a story about the ongoing troubles between Venezuela and Colombia.
Beef.
Yeah. It's a big beef. Or a little beef. Depending on who's counting. The Colombians think it's a little beef. They're like, hey, we didn't do anything wrong. Colombian agents weren't involved. We just hired some mercenaries.
Sure, buddy. Sure.
Capture our guy. And the United States is totally backing Colombia on this issue.
Hell yeah.
The Secretary of State designate, that's right, she hasn't been confirmed yet.
Uh-huh.
This is another story unto itself, but apparently Democrats in the U.S. Senate have been dragging their feet on the appointment of Bush's cabinet. She should be Secretary of State right now, but apparently it's been delayed. The debate has been very heated.
They had a feisty debate.
Yeah.
Kerry and Dianne Feinstein from California, they had a very exchange. Condoleezza Rice and Feinstein had a very heated exchange.
But anyways, Condoleezza Rice, Condi.
What a dumb bitch.
Well, actually, I had a friend who had an erotic dream about Condi Rice.
You know what? I don't like calling women like that because I think it's really, like, low. But these women that kills children, and her policy kills children and women, that's what she deserves.
Yeah. Well, apparently it was a good date in his dream.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he made an ass of himself.
And they went to get chicken wings and stuff.
Yeah. Well, first he showed up at her home, and I guess they're like Wolfowitz and Cheney were hanging out.
Wow.
And they were wearing casual clothing, like shorts and
polo shirts,
yeah.
Playing golf.
Right. And he said something like off color that kind of upset them. And then, at the end of the night, everything was good with Condi. You know, they had a nice date. This is just a dream, guys. This didn't really happen.
We're allowed to have dreams.
Right. But anyways.
I have a dream. I want to be a DJ in a pirate radio station.
But
I'm a doctor. I'm sorry.
But anyway, she's all behind the Colombians. She says they have 100% support from the United States.
Of course, Plan Colombia 1 and 2 coming up.
Lula from
Brazil, La Tierra La Samba,
has been trying to mediate.
Mm-hmm.
He's been trying to convince both parties to come to Brazil. Maybe talk this over, some churrasco, you know. Maybe take a little trip on the Amazon River and hope not to get attacked by pirates. I don't know. But anyways, people are coming out in support of Chavez in Venezuela. Of course, the people support Chavez.
Most of the country, by the election numbers.
Right. Most of the country. However, he isn't all that chill of a guy in some respects. But he's been milking this for all it's worth.
He's a very good actor.
Yeah.
A la Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. Economic ties frozen. He wants an apology.
Diplomatic ties as well.
Diplomatic ties as well. But, I mean, this is political drama at its finest.
Yeah, I bet.
But, yeah.
And then in Bolivia, tens of thousands of Bolivians have rallied in Santa Cruz, the country's economic capital, to go against cuts in fuel subsidies. Organizers pledged that the marchers, the culmination of days of unrest over fuel prices will remain peaceful. Demonstrators in Santa Cruz also vowed to proceed with plans to declare an autonomy for their wealthy region. Troops, however, have surrounded several key oil installations around the city after clashes with riot police on Thursday. Yeah. And now, if you guys want to lose some weight, you don't have to go to Oprah's trainer. You don't have to get onto a Dr. Atkins, now the late Dr. Atkins diet. No. You want to lose some ass? You want to lose some belly, you guys and girls? Go to Las Palmas. Gomez, tell us what's Las Palmas diet.
Well, it all depends on your income.
True.
That's very true. If you don't have any money at all, you can look forward to some meat broth.
Ugh.
A few tortillas.
And maybe some beans.
No.
Not even beans?
You might get a jalapeno.
In the ass or in the tortilla?
Well, maybe it goes up your ass first.
Oh.
And then it goes in the tortilla.
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa. No, it's not that bad. No, I'm sure.
Gomez is that bad. Believe me, Mexican prison
is
yes,
that bad.
Yes.
Yeah. No, but a lot of people.
If you're poor.
A lot of people have a little bit of money.
Especially the narcos.
Yeah, the narcos have plenty of money, and they have a rather good life. They have cell phones. They have, you know, they can communicate with the outside world at will.
Uh huh.
Which is the main problem.
They can go out and for the weekends, get prostitutes, go out of prison for a weekend, police sanction, and come back Monday morning at 7.
That's right.
Take their roll call.
That's right. I mean, it's pretty, it's not that bad of a gig. It's a lot like Thai prison, but more expensive, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because those narcos are paying a lot for those privileges.
But they have the money, man.
That's true. They
you guys
have plenty
still doing
of money.
The cocaine here and still smoking the pot? We'll
That's right. Service. All of you listeners out there, just imagine how many illicit drugs you consume. You're helping these narcos.
Oh, you
a
are.
Nice life in a Mexican prison.
You're helping Ociel Cárdenas and Benjamín Arellano Félix. Because they were joining forces in prison. They were enemies to the dead, and they got arrested by Mexican authorities last year and the year before, and now they were operating together.
Well, but why? And it's because the Juarez cartel is taking over their business.
Because they're inside the can.
They're inside the can. And this other gang is taking advantage of their temporary incarceration. To cut out a little piece for themselves out of these two guys' cartels. However, I think the Juarez gang is definitely going to meet a little bit of resistance from these guys.
Fuck yeah, in and out of prison.
I mean, people have been getting killed left and right.
For example, in Matamoros, as a result of these... let's go back for a week before. Mexico's three top security prisons have been placed on maximum alert, meaning that the Mexican army, they're very fucking ruthless, took over the prison systems, you know? And
They surrounded them with armored personnel carriers.
Yeah, after six prison officers were killed, blindfolded, tortured, and killed last week in Matamoros, in the border region of the United States. So, and President Fox has said that he's ready to wage the mother of all battles. Are we talking about Saddam Hussein or 1991 or fucking Fox here?
Yeah, but with what, though? I mean...
Yeah, with what, though?
I mean, which security services are you willing to trust with the job of dismantling or attacking these cartels?
Nobody.
Nobody. It's really hard. I mean, if I were a Mexican leader right now... What would I do?
Mm-hmm.
Well... I might want to start my own cartel at that point.
Nice.
Yeah. Add some competition. And maybe make like a union for traffickers.
Uh-huh.
Because all of them use people to get the drugs across the border. You know, and I'm sure they don't all work for one person.
No.
They you know, a lot of these guys are kind of freelance. They're taking a big risk. And I think I would try to unionize the cartel labor force.
Nice.
Yeah. You might get some resistance from the cartels over that. But this is one thing. Granted, if you're a police chief, you're kind of exposed. You kind of have to move around a lot. But I'm sure Fox is pretty safe from assassination.
Man, the Mexican president holds more power within Mexico than the U.S. president.
That's true. Well, if you're president-elect, you're still like, you know, yeah. You might still get shot in TJ.
What happened to Colosio? Well, it seems that the almighty leader of the Incan Empire in the 21st century, Peru, Mr. Alejandro Toledo, which... his popularity soared to 10% when he destroyed a coup.
Right, the one platoon of soldiers which, like, attacked a police station.
150.
Yeah.
Well, he got 10%.
He got 10% out of that.
For a week. He's back to his regular numbers of 3%.
Oh, my God. And what's Fujimori doing? I mean, when is he set to come back? I mean,
we'll find you that next week. How's that?
Okay, that sounds good.
But Peru's president, Alejandro Toledo, says he will help investigators looking into claims that his party forged thousands of signatures to get registered. Mr. Toledo's sister is under house arrest over the allegations which relate to the 2000 general election. The president has said that he will cooperate with judicial and congressional proofs to clear up doubts over the affair. Ay, ay, ay. This guy is fucking funny.
Yeah, I don't want to be Toledo right now.
Never.
Yeah. I mean, he is one harassed mofo. He's getting it from everywhere. He's getting it from the army. He's getting it from his own people. He's getting it from the judiciary.
In the ass, in the mouth, and everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, he's getting it from, like, Japanese people, like
Fujibori and Company,
the Pacific,
the U.S.
But more in Latin American news. Apparently, the Pope has chosen a publisher.
The Pope will die next this year, I hope.
For his autobiography. And, yeah, he gave the rights to Lord Weidenfeld.
Lord.
Yes, he's a lord.
Pretty
publishing cool. house. But what makes this interesting is that this man is also, I mean, he's been very successful, Lord Weidenfeld. He's published a lot of people. But one of his most famous people that he ever published was Nabokov. That's true. Born Carol Josef Wiolta. He wrote Lolita, and yeah, marvelous book. But apparently, you know, the Pope's a bit more swinging than I thought. You know, well, I suppose this guy can get Lolita published and turn into, you know, one of the best sellers of the entire century.
Gomez, you think
he can do a good job on the Pope's memoirs?
You think the Pope is still alive, or do you think he's like artificially kept alive?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, five, 10 years ago, I would have been like, no, he's still alive. But the advances I've seen in robotics and in, you know, just special effects make me believe that perhaps maybe the Pope is dead so far. But what better for the Vatican
than
to have a dead Pope?
It's like a puppet. They pull the strings, he moves his hand,
yeah,
and then they put him in the back, and he screams.
But I wouldn't necessarily agree. Even this Pope is very conservative for most Catholics.
But is he alive, though?
I think he's alive, but maybe just Opus Dei has their arm shoved up his ass.
Hmm.
Yeah. The Jesuits are trying to get that arm pulled out, but
yeah,
they've been unsuccessful so far. Oh, and by the way, for those people who remember the Spanish Inquisition, the Jesuits are rather reformed. They're sort of like the left-wing liberal arm of the Catholic Church these days. They publish very controversial papers.
That was a controversy.
Yeah. They're all about, you know, raising playing devil's advocate. Here's a little...
La teoría de liberación.
Yeah. Here's an interesting point. If you guys don't know where the term devil's advocate comes from...
Where does it come from?
It comes from the Catholic legal process.
No shit. I understand why.
Yeah.
Well, explain us to our listeners.
Well, okay. When someone, for instance, is getting canonized, the devil's advocate tries to make a case
against him. Or
against
her.
Him.
Indeed.
Yeah, you know, a little laundry list of sins and things.
He fucked this girl. He was 10.
Right, right.
Yeah, whatever.
And they act as sort of a defense attorney when you have an inquisition against you.
Wow.
They're like, oh, don't kill this guy, you know. Yeah, that's where it comes from. It's kind of interesting.
It is interesting. Now,
yeah, I was made aware of this through a novel called Canticle for Leibowitz.
Whoa.
Where an actual mutant with horns in his head plays the part of a devil's
advocate.
In a nuclear post-apocalyptic future.
Wow.
Yeah. But apparently these guys really existed not that long ago.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. And now it seems that Mr. Pinochet, he's getting his bank accounts investigated truthfully. Yep, they're going to investigate, and he's going to face at least some kind of justice.
Yeah, ever since they found those phony documents.
So many names.
Yeah, man, this guy was crazy. I mean,
and passports.
You think your ex-girlfriend was bad with, like, you know, the thousands of dollars in debt, multiple names, bankruptcy, and, you know, all this other bullshit. Pinochet, on the other hand, is like a real crack whore from hell when it comes to hidden bank accounts and different names and just leading a very messy financial life.
Gomez, let's go pick up some strawberries.
Sounds marvelous. Telegrafica Cultura, provided to you by Free Radio San Diego, 96.9 FM, pirate969.org. Apparently, Mogadishu's police chief
El jefe, pues,
has been shot dead. Apparently, four armed gunmen, well, I guess they would be armed if they were gunmen, but anyways, they entered his room at his house at around 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. and they shot him 7 times in the head and chest.
No, that's a bloody Sunday.
Yeah. And then they took off in a waiting pickup truck. Apparently, things have been pretty rough in Mogadishu. The levels of crime have increased, actually, since a government has been named. Now there's a date, too. The government's supposed to show up in Mogadishu on February 1st.
How's it going
to
show up?
We'll see if they have enough loose change together yet to pay off the gunmen holding the perimeter of Mogadishu.
We'll see.
Now, possible motives for this crime. Some of them think that, well, the police chief obviously supports the government because he's the police chief. He was named such. He's only had the job for a few months now.
Oh, he got gunned down already? Wow.
Yeah. And some people think it's because he supported the idea of having foreign soldiers in Somalia in some kind of peacekeeping mission. Now, these aren't Westerners. They're probably going to come from other African countries. This is like an African Union type deal. You know, it's probably going to be some Kenyans in Mogadishu. But apparently there are a lot of people who just don't like the idea of peacekeepers in Somalia. But here's another idea. This guy, his name is General Yusuf Ahmed Sarinle, the guy who got killed.
Really?
Was investigating this really nasty crime where 700 bodies were exhumed and dumped by the airport.
Wow.
From an Italian cemetery. And the reason why they got dumped is because a militia group has taken over the cemetery. They've actually, like, set up inside the cemetery.
Uh-huh.
And I guess they needed to dig trenches and all sorts of other things and just got rid of the bodies. This BBC correspondent actually observed small children playing with bones nearby the cemetery. And since then, the Italian government, of course, has gone absolutely apeshit. Silvio Berlusconi has ordered...
A piece of shit.
Yeah. Ordered that his foreign minister, Gianfranco Fini, send a special envoy to Somalia to express Italian outrage to the Somali government.
Alla Il Duce.
Which is based in Kenya. But... yeah, apparently the militias are there. The BBC correspondent tried to go into the cemetery. This guy's named Mohamed Olad Hassan. I guess he's from Somalia. And he was denied access. The militia that had set up in the military, in the cemetery, just didn't want to speak with him, kind of threatened him with guns, told him to leave. And, that's what's going on. So it might have been that militia.
Wow. So, what's happening in Nepal, man?
Oh, well, hell. You know, law enforcement authorities all over are just having it rough. Some of you might know out there that there is a Maoist revolution going on in Nepal.
It's in the 21st century.
Right. It's been going on since 1996. They've been trying to depose Nepal's monarchy.
They've been close a few times.
I mean, they have Kathmandu surrounded.
Yeah, at one point.
Now, I've heard that that's a bit of an exaggeration.
Really?
Yeah. Nepal actually has a lot of transportation strikes.
Ah.
The truck drivers, unions, and everything are actually really strong, and it's very normal for, you know, communication and transportation out of the capital to be cut off even by labor organizations. And it's usually not done very violently, but what they'll do is, like, throw plastic bags full of urine and shit.
That will do it for me.
Into the cab of your vehicle.
Oh.
You know. And just try to make life miserable for you if you're defying the shutdown.
Too much for golden showers.
Right. But apparently, some Nepali soldiers who were involved in removing mines that Maoist rebels had placed were shot at, and it turned into a 4-hour-long firefight.
Damn.
Where 23 security personnel, police and army, were killed, and another 6 Maoist insurgents were killed.
Wow. So they had the upper hand.
They definitely have the upper
numbers.
Hand. Now, the Maoists have had the upper hand in a lot of situations in Nepal. But apparently, things are just getting a little bit tighter. Apparently, 11,000 people have died since 1996.
A lot of people dying.
Well, especially for a country the size of Nepal.
Exactly.
Which isn't that big. You know, it's like, I mean, compared to India, even Bangladesh, it's a small country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we got this song from a band from L.A., Below Me. Song is called Below Me by Lifeheat. This group, this duo, they're fucking amazing. They're from L.A., and they're really good people. I got to meet them on Halloween night, a very spooky night, a very beautiful night indeed.
Marvelous. Well, we're on a holiday theme then, because the next song is...
Below Me by Lifeheat.
Yes.
This is 96.9 FM Telegráfica Oculta.
Below me, don't be pieces of my heart. You're killing me, you're killing me.
Welcome back to the Telegrafía Oculta 96.9 FM. This poem is for you, and you know who you are. This is by Pablo Neruda, from 20 Canciones Desesperadas, 20 Poemas de Marina Canción Desesperada, poema 5. Para que tú me oigas, mis palabras se algazan a veces como las huellas de las gaviotas en las playas. Collar, cascabel ebrio para tus manos suaves como las uvas. Y las miro lejanas, mis palabras, más que mías son tuyas. Van trepando en mi viejo dolor como las hiedras. Ellas trepan así por las paredes húmedas. Eres tú la culpable de este juego sangriento. Ellas están huyendo de mi guarida oscura. Todo lo llenas tú, todo lo llenas. Antes que tú poblaron la soledad que ocupas, y están acostumbradas más que tú a mi tristeza. Ahora quiero que digan lo que quiero decirte, para que tú las oigas como quiero que me oigas. El viento de la angustia aún las suele arrastrar. Huracanes de sueños aún a veces las tumban. Escuchas otras voces en mi voz dolorida. Llanto de viejas bocas, sangre de viejas súplicas. Ámame, compañera, no me abandones. Sígueme, sígueme, compañera, en esa ola de angustia. Pero se van tiñendo con tu amor mis palabras. Todo lo ocupas tú, todo lo ocupas. Voy haciendo de todas un collar infinito para tus blancas manos suaves como las uvas. And this song is also for you, my beloved one. This is Mark Kramer in the Twitch, and on Valentine's Day we are going to have a surprise for you. First of all, I have to submit it to Commissar Gomez, but we're working on something special for you lovers out there.
Marvelous.
Yeah, my dominatrix Valentine by the Twitch.
Well, we know that that love is free. Yes.
So far.
Especially for a political commissar, and especially, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later.
I know, oh. At home. This is my dominatrix Valentine for you by Mike Kramer in the Twitch.
I find myself in pieces waiting for your kiss. 'Cause I never knew that making love could feel like this. And then I turned around and got slapped in the face with bliss. And you said, so I follow my heart, doing that'll be the hardest part as I wait for you. But my skin is turning blue until I am yours. Do I mind my dominatrix Valentine? You heard me just fine. Gotten drunk off love a thousand times before, and I'm like some lovesick puppy just writhing on the floor. And now I have the scars to prove you're the one I adore, the only one I adore. So I follow my heart, doing that'll be the hardest part as I wait for you. But my skin is turning blue.
This story is about the village of Manideep, which is only 20 kilometers away from the Indian city of Bhopal. Now, if you industrial accident fans out there will know that Bhopal is the location of the world's deadliest industrial accident, where tens of thousands of people died in their sleep.
20 years ago.
Yeah. As fluorine gas escaped out of underground tanks and found low ground, settling into a valley which happened to be filled by a city of tens of thousands of people. Yeah. Anyways, very few people came out of that alive. But anyways, this is a protest. People have been surrounding Pepsi and Coca-Cola plants all over India. But in Manideep, there is a 4.5 mile long human chain surrounding the Coca-Cola plant, which they say is not only laced with pesticides, but that these plants are depleting the groundwater of their farming communities. Now, Manideep is in Kerala, and Kerala is a pretty dry state of India. They don't get a whole bunch of rain. I mean, you think of India, you think of monsoons and the Ganges River, but it's an awfully large country, and some parts of it are actually in a drought. And apparently, these plants consume something like 200,000 liters of water a day. And the residents of these areas are saying that, well, this is just depleting our groundwater. Now, in the defense of Coca-Cola and Pepsi. Well, actually, no, this is not in their defense. Apparently, they account for 99% of the soft drink market in India.
I bet.
Yeah.
All over the planet.
Never mind. This is I'm like the Washington Post now.
You liar.
I'm recounting what I just said.
Are you the emperor of the United States?
No, this is totally counterintuitive to the analysis I was thinking of earlier. But apparently they own 99% of the market shares in India's, you know, sort of thing. And they're saying, well, no, you know, it's just because the water we use already has pesticides in it.
Mm.
Which is probably true. But that doesn't mean it should be in your fucking Coca-Cola.
Hell no.
Hell no. And the people of Manideep are not taking it anymore. Now, for those of you who are into Law and Order, you know, this will make you happy. Apparently, Lieutenant General Safdar Hussain of the Peshawar Corps in Pakistan.
Damn.
Has said that the tribe's people have been extremely cooperative with the army in their search for Taliban and Al-Qaeda insurgents. He says that the people of Peshawar are about as patriotic as anybody else in Pakistan.
Or the United States, for my
or the United States,
Jesus
for that
Christ.
Matter. And he says that it's because of the large-scale development work that has been initiated in the tribal areas during recent years under army supervision has made it so. So, this is kind of an interesting, like comparison to make. In Pakistan and in Afghanistan, We've been mostly focusing on development projects,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to bombing the living shit out of their country.
You need allies in the world of terrorism, quote unquote.
And it may take a few years, but people may come around to your side. Apparently, this Lieutenant General says that people are aware of the propaganda they are receiving from Taliban and Al-Qaeda forces, and have decided over the many years that, hell, you know, maybe they're full of shit anyways. But this is an interesting story. I usually thought those regions were just kind of playing along, you know, trying to save their own skins. But anyways, we're coming up.
Mr. Gomez, well, next week we're going to try to rescue Icaro again. Mm-hmm. We'll see whenever it happens. And we have a surprise for you, lovers, on Valentine's Sunday. But until then, we're going to see you next week.
All right. Well, good night, you people out there. Keep your noses clean. Otherwise, the...
Icaro is going to fly with a lot of cocaine in his wings.
That's right. Yeah, just wipe your nose up. Maybe snorkel some water. You know, kind of get that shit out of your nose for a while. Anyways, good night, guys.
Buenas noches, and this is Charlie Garcia, Cerca de la Revolución. Thank you for observatory.com every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m., www.observatory.com. And, of course, the best station in San Diego, 96.9 FM, Free Radio San Diego. Check it out. We are the real deal.
That's right. And for all you guys out there, we don't sell anything. If you have to pay money...
Don't pay.
Don't pay. Don't pay money for our show.
No.
Just listen to it.
Free.
Record it. Distribute it. Whatever you want. But don't buy anything that is related to us because it's free.
Yeah. Hence, Free Radio San Diego. Free media. Pirate media. You don't have to pay shit. Media
right.
should be free. Gomez, buenas noches, señor. And this is Tele García, Cerca de la Revolución. Telegrafía Oculta. Crew, we'll see you next weekend.
Dobry noc.
Free Radio San Diego, 96.9.